My name is Dr. Ian Storch. I'm a board certified gastroenterologist and osteopathic physician, and you are listening to DO or Do Not. If you are interested in joining our team or have suggestions or comments, please contact us at doordonotpodcast.com. Share our link with your friends and like us on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We hope you enjoy this episode.
On this episode of the Do or Do Not podcast, we focus on women in osteopathic medicine. Tonight, we have the honor of interviewing Dr. Thomas Quinn, a military and family practice physician who transitioned into academic medicine, teaching at the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine branch in Florida. During a pilgrimage to the Kirksville Museum of Osteopathic Medicine, he extensively researched and wrote a definitive book entitled The Feminine Touch, Women in Osteopathic Medicine, which later was made into an Emmy Award-winning PBS documentary. Dr. Quinn describes the importance that AT still placed on training women in a time that this was not the norm. He further highlights the contributions that prominent female physicians, such as Margaret Wilson, Barbara Ross Lee, and Karen Nichols, have made to osteopathy. We hope you enjoy this episode, and would suggest, if you have not heard some of our prior episodes highlighting these amazing women, or the PBS special, that you take the time to do so.
There we go. Dr. Quinn, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me.
We're very excited to have you on the podcast tonight. And the reason that we invited you, just to give you a little history, is that when we started the podcast about 3 years ago, I interviewed Margaret Wilson, who is one of my favorite DOs and the dean at AT Stilcom. And she told me that I may want to look at The Feminine Touch, which was a video. It was PBS. Is that correct?
Yep.
And I watched it. It was amazing. And recently, somebody told me there was a book. I didn't even know there was a book. I found out it was published by you. I read the book. And I said, we have to have you on the podcast. So can you start by talking a little bit about the book? What gave you the idea for the book? And tell us about the history of women in osteopathic medicine.
Okay. Well, first I'll talk about the book and how it came about. I'm the professor at the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine at the Bradenton campus in Florida. And I teach the History of Osteopathic Medicine course. So I decided to take a group of students out to the Museum of Osteopathic Medicine in Kirksville. And so myself and my wife and a couple students went out there. We got involved in looking into the history of the profession, and all of a sudden hit us that in the very early stages of the profession, there were many women in the osteopathic college. And I knew from my reading in history that that was a period of time when there were very few women in medicine. And when we started looking into it, we found out that it was the first osteopathic college that really and truly opened up the doors of medicine to women. Prior to that, there were only a handful of women who had been able to get into the profession, and most of those got in by attending all-female medical schools. But the American School of Osteopathy, which was founded in 1892, which the original osteopathic medical school, was the first medical school in the United States that truly became co-educational and opened its doors equally to men and women. So once we found this out, I decided that was the book that needed to be written.
It's amazing. So again, I read the book, and you really start by chronicling the history of women in medicine, which it was very surprising to me. You know, I think we kind of take for granted now how open things are, but in the early 1800s, it was very closed.
In the early 1800s, there were absolutely no women in medicine in the United States. The first graduate from any medical school was in 1849, when Elizabeth Blackwell graduated. And she was accepted into a school only because when she put an application in, the faculty decided that we were going to let the students decide whether or not they would accept a woman, because no woman had ever been in a medical school prior to that in the United States. So when it went to the students thought it was a prank. So they all voted to accept her. And then when they found out it wasn't a prank, they actually petitioned and tried to get her, the school, not to accept her, but they had already sent out the acceptance agreements and she had already agreed to come. So therefore they had to accept her.
It's an amazing story.
The amazing part is after all of this, she graduated number one in her class.
Obviously not surprising to a lot of our listeners that have gone to medical school and have great female colleagues. We interviewed a while ago Norman Gevitz about the book The DOs and talked about A.T. Still. Can you tell us a little bit about A.T. Stills? Obviously, he had an open attitude, or he had a different perspective on women in medicine. Can you talk a little bit about how he felt about his first class and going forward?
Yes, A.T. Still, from the very beginning, always was very open to having women in osteopathic medicine. His mother and his sisters were literally pioneer women out in the what was then the frontier. In Kansas and Missouri back in the early 1800s was really the frontier at that time. And they were very competent and very capable women. And so therefore he knew that women would be certainly capable of doing medicine. And he was absolutely right.
So after A.T. Still, the osteopathic schools still seem, from your book, to have had a number of women than the allopathic schools, even when they integrated. Is that correct also?
Yes, for most of the time. Now, there was a short period right after World War II where the osteopathic profession did not have except many women. And I think it was because they were being just pushed out by the men. The GI Bill of Rights gave all of the veterans from World War II, they would pay their tuition to go to medical school. So, and even undergraduate college. So many of them were applying. The women got pushed out for a number of years, but then starting in the later 1960s, both the osteopathic and the allopathic profession started to accept more women into the professions again. So right now we're running very, very close to 50-50 male and female.
It's amazing, Thomas. And then you were also in the book, you actually go through individual women. And I believe that you mentioned that the first dean of any medical school that was a woman was at an osteopathic school. Is that correct?
Yes. Way back in the 1800s, there was a woman who was actually president of a school. Nettie Bowles actually became the president and founder of one of the early osteopathic medical schools.
And then in the book, again, I just want to sort of highlight some of the things that I enjoyed about the book. You talk about individual women that have made a significant contribution, such as I mentioned, Margaret Wilson and Barbara Ross Lee. And you really go through woman by woman what their contributions were both to medicine and osteopathic medicine specifically.
Yes. So basically, what I did is I broke down the book into different sections of history, the early years, the middle years, and the later years. And then at the end of each chapter, I wrote about women who were dominant in the osteopathic profession during that particular era.
No one has time to read, especially we're talking. It's unfortunate they have time to read, but medical students and pre-medical students are focusing on their studies. But the special is excellent. I think it's about an hour. I really, really enjoyed the special. How did that come about? How was that pitched to you, and how did it come to fruition?
Basically, I made some contact with WEDU, which is the largest PBS station in the state of Florida, and they're based out of Tampa, Florida, and sent them a copy of the book, and it took them about 10 days, and they were back and said, yes, we've just read your book. We want to do a documentary on the book. So it just came about that once they read it, they were very interested in doing it.
And now I assume when you watched it, you thought it was amazing. Like, I think it's really, really a great piece of work.
I think they did an excellent job with the documentary. It won the Emmy for the best historic documentary of the year, which was 2017, the year it was produced. So it is an Emmy Award documentary, so it is worthwhile.
And it, correct me if I'm wrong, but the title, for anyone that's listening that wants to find it, they could just go onto Google and type in The Feminine Touch.
The book is entitled The Feminine Touch, History of Women in Osteopathic Medicine. But the documentary is called The Feminine Touch, The Struggle for Equality in Medicine.
And again, if an interested student wanted to watch the video, they could just go on Google, and there are multiple sites where they can find the video.
Yes, they could. And they could download it, and it is a one-hour documentary.
That's great. Okay, Thomas, we're going to switch gears a little bit away from your book, which is amazing, and I highly recommend reading or watching the video, and just talk a little bit about you. Can you tell me when you became interested in medicine and decided that you wanted to become a doctor?
Well, I've always wanted to be a doctor since I was a kid. I remember in grade school telling the teacher that I wanted to be a doctor when I grew up. Why, I really don't know. It's just something that has always attracted me. I don't have any other physicians in my family, so I didn't have any role models, but it's just something I always wanted to do. I became interested in osteopathic medicine specifically because at the time while I was in college, I was moonlighting for some extra cash at a local emergency room. I was the scribe in the emergency room, and one of the residents who was there at the time, I had known from the Boy Scouts. He was the senior camp counselor, and I was a junior camp counselor at a Boy Scout reservation. And he found I was interested in osteopathic medicine, and he did everything in his power to convince me I was making the worst mistake of my life. And every time he gave me an argument, I happened to have to drive past the osteopathic college on my way to work. I would stop in the college and go to the library, and I came on first name basis with the librarian at the osteopathic college. And then I started to refute him. And the next thing I know, I had totally convinced myself that osteopathic medicine was the way I wanted to go.
So where did you end up going to osteopathic school, and what was your experience like?
Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, which is an excellent college. Medical school is difficult. There's no question about that. I was able to go through undergraduate college, work 40 hours a week, play sports, and still get good enough grades to go to medical school. But once I got into medical school, it was everything I had in order to be able to do well in medical school. So it is a hard road. Anybody interested, don't think it's an easy way, but the rewards are well worth it once you get out.
So, Tom, did you do a residency after medical school, and where did you go into practice, and what type of practice did you have?
Well, I've had a very varied career. I graduated from medical school before family practice residencies were invented. So I graduated back in 1966. The first family practice residencies never came about until about 1970. So therefore, basically after I graduated, I was one of the very first osteopathic physicians that was commissioned as the medical officer in the military. So after I finished my year of internship, I went into the United States Navy as a medical officer, spent 2 years in the Navy. And then when I came out, I went into private medical practice in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where I had a cradle-to-the-grave type practice. I delivered over 2,000 babies in my medical career, and this is as a family practice physician. And of course, then I took care of the babies in my practice, so I had a large pediatric practice. In the same period of time that I was in practice, I also stayed in the military. So I ended up with 24 years of military experience, which in my last position there, I was the state surgeon of the Pennsylvania National Guard.
So, Tom, You also mentioned to me that you did a lot of osteopathic manipulation in your practice. Is that correct?
Yep. Yes, I did. I always liked manipulation. I found it very effective. And it was one of the best practice builders you ever want to have. I would say probably 80% of the new patients that called the office that weren't referred by other patients called the office because they were looking for a DO who did manipulative therapy. So the osteopathic manipulative treatments, which then when the patients came in the office, I would always examine them, listen to their heart and lungs, take their history, review the medications so that they knew that I practiced the full range of medicine, not just manipulative medicine. And then the next, most of those patients end up as my full-time patients. And I spent 22 years in private medical practice. Then I moved to Florida and did corporate practice. I took a second specialty in occupational environmental medicine and worked for different companies here in Florida. And then now for the last 17 years, I've been teaching at the Bradenton campus of LECOM, Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine.
So do you teach osteopathic medicine there or do you teach family practice? What do you teach?
When I was there full time, I was teaching a little bit of everything. LECOM Bradenton is a problem-based learning school so that most of the teaching takes place with one professor in a classroom with no more than 8 students, sometimes 7. So the majority of the classes are one professor and 7 or 8 students. But I also teach in the clinical diagnosis and the osteopathic manipulative medicine departments.
So my next question for you is, you know, we usually ask people if they could change their career path, if there's something else that they would consider doing, or if they could go back, would they still have gone to osteopathic school? It sounds like that's not even something I need to ask you. Is that right?
Well, what I would have done differently is I would have gone into teaching earlier. I love being in osteopathic practice, but I love teaching even better. So I'm very happy I went to an osteopathic medical school. I enjoyed my practice. I loved delivering babies. That was the best part of my practice because it was always a happy part of practice. But I really and truly enjoy working with young people and passing that information on to the next generation of DOs.
Pay it forward, I always say, right? Pay it forward.
Yes.
Tom, you mentioned to me when we were talking earlier that you have a scholarship for osteopathic students, which sounded amazing. And I thought maybe you'll take a few minutes just to talk to our listeners about what the scholarship is and who listening might be able to apply for the scholarship.
Well, I have established a scholarship with the American Osteopathic Foundation, which is a part of the American Osteopathic Association. Now, mine is just one of multiple scholarships. So if any of the osteopathic medical students are interested in scholarships, they should go to the American Osteopathic Foundation website, and they will find not only my scholarship, but multiple other scholarships that are available for osteopathic students. My scholarship particularly is a $4,000 a year scholarship that's awarded to 2 different students. So it's 2 students each year will get a $4,000 scholarship, and they'll get $2,000 in their 3rd year of medical school and $2,000 in the 4th year of medical school.
That's amazing. That's very exciting. So hopefully our listeners will check that out. And you know, obviously, I don't think there are too many medical students that can't use some help. Expensive, right?
They should check into the Osteopathic Foundation because mine is just one of multiple scholarships that that organization offers.
Tom, you've been great, and I really appreciate your time. I'm going to ask you one last question, which is sort of our grand finale question. That is, can you give us one piece of advice that you were given by someone else? And that could be, you know, a teacher when you were at college or medical school, your parents, your wife, a friend, that was written on the bathroom wall. One piece of advice that you were given that you think of and really feel has helped you in your career and that you would like to pass on to our listeners?
The thing that jumps into my mind immediately is something that I heard from my anatomy professor, whose name was Angus Cathy. He was a DO, absolutely fantastic anatomist. And he had one saying that he used to put at the end of most of his lectures and said, "Do not practice medicine for money. If you practice good medicine, the money will take care of itself." And I think anybody that's going into medicine for the primary motivation of money, you're going into the wrong profession. There's many other, you make good money in medicine, I'm not denying that, but there's many other professions you can make more money. You want to go into medical practice because you have the desire to help people. And that's really the motivation you should have to go into medicine.
I think that's great advice, and I would echo
practice,
that.
Practice good medicine, and the money will take care of itself.
I think that's excellent advice. Again, Tom, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Okay, I was very happy to be here, and thank you for asking me.
This concludes our episode of Do or Do Not. Send all inquiries, comments, suggestions, and even let us know if there's someone you want us to interview to doorduenotpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Do or Do Not Podcast for updates. If you enjoyed our podcast, please share it with your classmates and administration. We have plenty of more interviews lined up, and we're excited to share them with you. This is Tian Yu Shea. Thank you guys so much for listening to Do or Do Not.